Operator, give me the number for 911.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
It's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold grind. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, a woman and the kids and the dogs and me. Got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women old boys raised on shotguns. From the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the Western skies. And we can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, 'cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. And we can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Thank you. is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Everybody, it's Oshaziz here. Hope y'all doing well. It's pretty decent out here on my side of the planet, with the exception of a little bit of rain that we've been basically bombarded with for quite some time. So, raining for 40 days and 40 nights, it seems like. So everything's muddy outside. The grass is growing like weeds, because more or less it is weeds by now. Anyway, I posted a couple two or three videos in there in the chat room over there on Awake Radio chat, and on Shaziz Mad Science chat over there on shazizradio.com/superchat.html. Whew, I gotta catch my breath there. Anyway, so I posted a couple of two or three videos in there, one of which is a man that's out there. I can't remember what his name is, Doug, on it. Anyway, he's using a fluorescent bulb for a capacitor. I got to take a quick pause here for a second. Let me throw on a quick tune. Apologize for that. Run around forgetting things. I've done it. Be right back.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. Thousand people in the street singing songs and carrying signs, mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Strikes deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop now. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop. Children, what's that sound?
Aw, crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Yeah, give me the number for 911 too. Anyway, yeah, I apologize for that. I left my coffee in the other room. I'm squealing on myself. I had to go get my coffee. You know, can't get my act together if I ain't got my coffee. And so I think I got my act together. Anyway, the first video that I put over there in the Awake Radio chat room and Shaziz Mad Science chat room was a video where a man's using a fluorescent bulb as a capacitor. It's actually done a couple videos, and it's basically the equivalence of a variable capacitor, that the way he set it up. And essentially he's got some aluminum tape that he's used to wrap around one side in a spiral at one end, and a couple sliding pieces of aluminum tape on the other end, and he's able to actually use it as a spark gap as well. That is a pretty good little video. If you look just past what he's trying to show you there, there's a lot of potential uses for that, such as recapturing wireless energy that you see people doing, like the Slayer exciters or Tesla coils and stuff like that. And also the second video that I put in there was a video, it's an old military video that shows basically a voltage doubler system. And it kind of explains about voltage doublers and what they're used for and stuff like that. And so with that said, in the voltage doubler section of the deal, if you happen to go out and tear apart old appliances and stuff like that, you can check out like old air ionizers, air purifiers and stuff, and you can find little circuit boards in there that are essentially like a voltage doubler, except there's a lot more going on to it. It starts off with a transistor, kind of like the Slayer exciter is a really super fast acting switch. And the Tesla coil itself is a has a fast acting switch via a spark gap. The spark gap distance between that's how you can tune it up, and you can also tune it by different sections of the coil that you can tap into on the primary as well. Basically shortening the time that pulse takes to get going. The Tesla coil is essentially an air transformer. Inside these little circuits that they have for air ionizers, it has it's an AC input side on it, and it has a little transistor in there that switches on and off real fast. That pulses a little transformer inside there that runs into a series of capacitors and diodes. There's 14 capacitors in this deal. And in between the capacitors, it looks like it's all ran in series, are diodes going opposite directions each time. So all the capacitors are basically running in series with each other, and all the diodes are running in series with each other. And so essentially what that does is step up the voltage, gives you some high voltage going on. And at the other end of the deal, you have a ground wire and a hot wire on the other end, and that's your little high voltage deal, and that's what creates your ozone from your air ionizer. And so with that said, there's a little simple circuit right there that gives you high voltage right out of the gate. With these circuits right here, this one here was normally set up to run like off of AC current. And so you don't have to run it off the full house mains. You can run this thing off of in any AC current. All at once is just enough to kick that transistor over. And so at the other end, you could use that high voltage to light up, you know, like fluorescent bulbs and such. See, in a post-apocalyptic scenario where you didn't have access to a power grid, you could still keep light in your house. Which brings me to my next video. Matthew Drummond did a really good video here, and essentially he shows I can't remember that dude's name either. Stinks getting senile. Anyway, he shows basically a whole lot of repurposing things that he's where he's taken different pump motors and built a generating system. Wish I could get him on the air today. I could have him explain it better to you. But anyway, what I like the most about this video is it takes the things out there that would have normally went off into the trash that can be repurposed. And so with that said, if you had a situation such as you didn't have electricity, we already have enough information right now to literally get electricity in the worst case scenario. Now, is it going to be as much as, say, a 30,000 watt or a 3,500 watt generator or above that's going to run your freezer and all that kind of stuff? No, you'd have to be a little bit more creative and try to modify certain appliances to work on less energy. But the key is that you could at least keep lights and fans going and pumps to pump water and stuff like that. So these videos that I see where they're repurposing things and using things that are outside the box are things that I'm interested in seeing. Let me see if I can. I'm gonna go ahead and call Justin, get him in here, and get his ID on the thing, man. See if I can get him. Yes, I want to call. Why does that always ask you if you want to call? If I'm pushing. Oh no, that's the wrong one, dude. Yeesh. Sorry about that. I was trying to call the whole mad science room. Anyway, he was off making tea. He's going to be gone for about 5 minutes, so I don't know if he's in. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, turn your camera off so it don't slow us down.
Okay. I just automatically answered it.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm talking about repurposing things, which would be good in actually in your scenario, the deal you're working up there, you know, being able to get parts for projects that, you know, you, in let's say, we're talking hypothetical, of course, right? Post-apocalyptic scenario. Most folks don't realize that there's a lot of different things out there, like little electric motors that you can get. Any motor that has a permanent magnet in there can be used as a generator. And most permanent magnet motors will produce AC current out the other end. However, there's a lot of little power supplies out there that you normally use for like charging your phones up and stuff like there. They have bridge rectifiers in there that turn the AC current into DC current. So it's really easy to build a generator. And the easiest way to pretty much store that energy would be in a battery bank. Would you agree?
I would agree.
Yeah, so, you know, if a worst-case scenario came down, I'm pretty sure that you could figure out how to basically build a generator, a wind turbine, or whatever that would actually start to store energy and to run, starting off with 12-volt appliances. And the larger your battery bank is, the more time you have on runtime as far as all that goes. And so if you had a huge battery bank and you started charging that up, got to I like to call it project overkill. If it only takes 10 batteries, I want 20. You know what I mean? That way, whenever I'm using off of one side, I'm still charging on the opposite side. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, yes.
So, you got any thoughts on the matter? Do you know any kind of gizmos that could be repurposed in worst case scenario?
Yeah, go around collecting bottles out of recycling bins and stuff. Everything's not junk. Nothing is junk. It's crazy what people throw in this world. Brand new windows, brand new blinds, brand new couches, brand new beds.
Oh yeah, let's take the windows for example. That's a good deal right there, because solar heating is, you know, you could build a box out of 2x4s and then throw some tin cans painted up inside there and circulate your air through there and get some hot air, some solar hot air, using old windows that people threw away. You know, especially them old sliding glass doors that somebody's always trying to give you. You know, they decide they're going to put them in their house, they get them in there, they don't like them, so they end up taking them back out, you know. And yep. So some folks just hate those things to pieces, and you can't even give them away in a garage sale. But if people knew that they could build a solar heat box out of those, I mean, you think would grab a hold of them. So what else you think? And I like the bottles too, because you can make capacitors with those.
Yeah. There's a lot of things to talk about. Always. Can we refer to electricity as pressure?
Well, that's basically what I'm trying to prove with the static generators that I'm working on, or the static motor. And that's why I like high voltage. That's why I'm bringing I got my lab back together, by the way. So I'm going to start videoing from there again. But I had a lot to do over there, but I'm actually getting it back together, and I'm going to start videoing from there, but I'm going back into strictly working with high voltage. And I'm not talking about the for show kind of high voltage. I'm not talking about where I'm going to have a lot of breakout on the top load of the Tesla coil. I'm talking
THB.
About, yeah, for wireless energy and such. Go ahead.
Yeah, you're talking about THB, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dead air.
Well, if you take your line and you put it up in the atmosphere, and you put a lighting jar at the end of it, and that lighting jar has a gap on the outside going to a ground rod, you'll see continuous electricity.
Well, that's what the atmospheric group's been doing.
Yeah.
Except they took it a step further, and they put nanocarbon on the wire that's going across their two poles up there. Little carbon fibers, you know, that are the little tips are picking up more static charge.
Popping the effluvium, the magnetic field, right? They're collectors, and it's the same way a Wimshurst machine works, right? When the two alike materials come across each other, imagine that they have a bubble around them. When they come across, they push, that bubble gets pushed equally because they're both equal, and that bubble gets popped by the brushes, the collectors. It's the same thing with our atmosphere. The collectors are popping the magnetic field,
and see,
they're running down the wire.
People, whenever I talk about how I don't care about current watts and amps at this point, they get frustrated with me because, you know, the inefficient
appliances. Because they're worried about the cause, not the effect.
Yeah, so that's exactly what I'm trying to say, is that I'm not to the point where I'm going to be running my refrigerator. That's not what I'm interested in. What I'm interested in is what's happening before all that. See, because energy travels in waves. And so, and, you know, like you said, the pressure, when you pop that bubble or whatever, nature is going to balance that out. It's going to bring it back. You know, it's like a rubber band effect.
That's right.
Yeah. And so I want to take and use different things that are going on in this deal, such as the snap back, grab some energy on the fly through. You know, and a lot of people have tried to do this with different types of circuitry. And so... when I talk about I don't care about current watts and amps, it's not that I'm trying to say, you know, hey, you know, throw the book out the window, that kind of deal. It's that before I get to that point, I want to be able to just move energy from point A to point B, such as high voltage at a high frequency, bringing in a static charge and charging up a capacitor bank, you know? And a transistor and a spark gap have something in common. The transistor isn't nothing more than a super fast switch. That's why it on your Slayer exciter, when it's pulsing the primary coil, it's because as your battery is charging up that transistor, it's turning that switch on and off really fast. And that pulse, that frequency that is from it turning on and off real fast, is sending waves up, which in turn is collected by the secondary and amplified as it's being boosted. Every time a new wave comes in behind it, it boosts that up even farther until you eventually get a breakout out the top of it. Even on a small Slayer exciter, you may not be able to see it with the visible eye or like a real tiny Slayer exciter, but it's there. You got some discharge coming out of the top of that right there.
The Slayer exciter, I guess, schematic, PNP or NPN, it works on both waves. It's a continuous push because the primary gets charged and then discharges to the secondary. And as it's discharging to the secondary, the transistor switch, and it's charging the secondary as well electrically. So
yeah.
it's being induced electrically and magnetically.
And
that's why there's such momentum.
And with the spark gap, it's basically doing the same exact thing. And believe it or not, as that thing is charging up to discharge across that spark gap, you actually get a push-pull kind of thing going on. It's like a static charge. You know how static will attract a paper to it, you know? So before that actual discharge goes across, you get a buildup that actually attracts, all right? And then whenever that finally builds up strong enough to literally leap across that gap and discharges, now you're into the pressure side of the deal. You see what I'm saying? And you can time this out by the distance by adjusting that spark gap, either shorter in or farther apart, you can actually time the frequency of that. And to get more tuning capability, you can either add multiple spark gaps or you can add an inert gas in between there in a vacuum so that you can literally speed up and slow down the electrons inside that vacuum before that spark gap or even after that spark gap. You see where I'm coming from? You still there? Yeah.
I'm here, yes.
Oh,
yes,
okay. Did you catch that one?
Yeah, I got it.
It might be better for you to hear me if I got my microphone up by my face then. Sorry about that. Anyway, you could tune the spark gap and basically use the spark gap like a transistor. And that's where some salvaging comes in, because if you know about them old air ionizers, air purifiers, I'm not talking about the old ones, but even those have some really good stuff in there. I'm talking about the newer air purifiers have a little circuit board in there that start off with a transistor and have a few resistors in there and a little transformer. A Tesla coil or a Slayer exciter coil isn't nothing more than an air core transformer. It's as simple as that, you know. And so we're not doing nothing fancy. We're just moving the energy from point A to point B. And it's all energy. All of it's potential energy. The only difference is the frequency rate at which it's coming in at. And all energy can be stored. You agree or disagree?
Well, we don't need the line. We don't need to plug in to listen to our radio. We choose to. They're transmitting current. A radio station is transmitting current. You can take that current and transmit it into light. But they don't want us to do that, because then the radio show is not, or you know, it's not gonna have any power. We're gonna consume it all.
Well, all they got to do is send out a wave just strong enough to reach you, and then you on the other side will use the current coming from your wall to basically amplify that. But in reality, if they had a strong enough power source at the other side, they could literally send a signal out and you wouldn't even have to amplify it, such as if you go all the way down to looking at the way the crystal radio functions. I mean, you can basically plug a crystal radio into the dirt and be able to hear radio signals. There's a lot of iron in the ground, a lot of minerals in there that basically are antennas.
Well, when we use the foxhole radio, it's cutting the signal in half because we're only using the bottom half.
Yeah. But either way, it shows that those signals, basically turn the doggone entire planet into a giant antenna, you know, because there's iron in there, there's all kinds of different conductive materials, there's piezoelectric crystals and stuff like that. If you tap in just right, you can literally send a signal clear around the globe. You know, Tesla did some pretty amazing things. And, you know, one of which was lighting up an incandescent light bulb. Now, an incandescent light bulb, for those of you who aren't sure what I'm talking about, are the old-style light bulbs that have a little tungsten element inside there. And you have to have some pretty good current watts and amps in order to be able to light that light bulb up, because you're actually sending more power into that light bulb than is necessary to light that light bulb. Because you need to be able to create friction, which in turn creates heat, and heat is light, vice versa.
Well, that's why when you say you don't care about current volts and amps or watts, it's correct, because, see, everything's about change. If I have a 1,000-watt light bulb that's putting out a light, it's designed to consume 1,000 watts. Does it mean that you can't revamp that light bulb and have it push out 2,000 watts per se, but it only used 200 watts?
I built a generator out of junk one time. Now, it didn't have enough current watts and amps to actually run an appliance. Well, however, what it did have is the frequency enough that where it could literally vibrate that in tungsten element at a rapid enough rate to light the light bulb up. So I was able to light that same light bulb up. You know, it's like the fluorescent bulbs. All right? You're using 110 volts AC. If you're over here in the U.S., you're using 110 to 120 volts AC to energize a ballast. And when you energize that ballast in the primary, it starts off at 110 volts AC, and then you have a step-up transformer on the opposite side on the secondary, which is like a whole lot of super fine wire, thousands of turns of super fine wire that you're taking that AC, and you're pressurizing it with that wire, and then sending out a high voltage frequency out the other side in a range about a couple thousand volts or more, that is hitting a inside the ends of those tubes of the fluorescent bulbs. There's a tungsten element, so basically those are preheaters. When you hit it with the first jolt of energy, it heats up that tungsten element, which basically warms up the inside of that tube. And then the high voltage frequency after that energizes the gas inside that tube, which basically bounces the electrons around and lights up via the phosphorescence inside that bulb. And, hold on, I got to, I'll get Thomas in here too.
So, would you agree that everything is just water and how the water is being agitated?
You have to explain that because I don't understand what you're talking about.
Well, having the tungsten just right, so it oscillates or vibrates, all it's doing is oscillating the water inside the bulb, the leftover water. It's agitating.
Well, if you're talking about basically sending waves through the water, yeah, I agree to that. As far as what we're all in, whether it be water or whatever, I mean, we got all the makeups for water floating around in the air. We got hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, so on and so forth, but all of it, we're in a sea of energy. So that's why I keep saying, if you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough for it, because it's everywhere. And only thing we're doing when we're moving energy from point A to point B, no matter how you're doing it, whether it be using a gasoline, an internal combustion engine to turn a generator head, is you're manipulating a magnetic field to create waves that are crossing the wires that are shaking loose electrons on there and getting your energy flow that way. I'm saying you don't need to go through all that. It doesn't take 110 volts AC to basically light up a fluorescent light bulb. If you got the right frequency, you can light that fluorescent light bulb up the same way. So everything that we've been doing to this point is basically inefficient, all right? And so this is why I say I don't care about current watts and amps. If Tesla was able to light up a tungsten element, a regular incandescent light bulb with just frequency waves alone, then that tells me that I can move energy from point A to point B and then store it into a bank of batteries and capacitors that I can then in turn take and use those to run inverters to run any appliance, no matter how inefficient it is. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, see, to me volts, amps, and watts doesn't matter because it's all gradient. Time. It takes time to do anything.
Yeah.
So if the light bulb lights up at 1,000 watts, that's how long it's going to light up for.
Well, time is a key, and it's what you just said right there. Time is a key there because that's what the transistor and the spark gap have in common is the timing. You know, when's the next wave coming out? Frequency, you know, the difference between 50 hertz and 60 hertz. You see what I'm saying? And at anything above 60 hertz will cause the so much electron flow going on inside your copper wiring that it will create heat, which in turn will destroy the coating of that wire. The only thing that ever goes wrong with an electric motor is that it gets hot and basically burns the coating of the insulator between the copper wire off, and it shorts out. The other only other thing potential is a mechanical, and that would be a bearing going bad. You know, so if you grease the bearings in your fan and you kept it cool, kept the motor itself cool, that fan would last forever. It'd never go wrong. If you could take that same transformer, which would basically probably quadruple the size of it, and individually, you know, strand a really good coating on that and wind that coil a different way to where even if it got hot, it still wouldn't short out. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
That transformer would never go bad. And I've actually seen incidences where you can take a old transformer, like a fan motor or coil inside there, and re-dip it into some lacquer, and it will seal up the gaps inside there, and the thing works again. See what I'm saying? So you can salvage and repurpose old junk. If you want to take the time to rewind and take all that wire, all that copper wire off of any electric motor, and if you want to take the time to re-insulate it, you can put that copper wire right back on, the same copper wire you took off, and that motor will work just as good as it ever did, because when you're running it, you're not losing electrons out of that copper wire. They're just bouncing around trading places. That's it.
Yeah, nothing's junk. It's just like you just said, how much time you put into it. A Triumph Bonneville is not a nice motorcycle because it's a nice motorcycle or because it came from somewhere special. It's because the man put a lot of time into it, a lot of energy, well-spent energy into that machine. Otherwise, it would just be a rock still.
Yeah. So if you was to build a device to insulate copper wire, it might be the slowest machine on the planet, such as like maybe you can only run the wire through this little gizmo that goes down into a pool of varnish and then goes out and stretches out for maybe 6 or 10 feet. It air dries, and then you bring the next section in and so on, and on the opposite side has something to rewind it. It may be obnoxious and time-consuming, but you could still salvage, even out of a burnt motor, the copper wire. Am I crazy?
No, you're not crazy.
I was going to say, I would beg to differ. I think you're crazy, but that doesn't mean you're not right.
Yeah, how's it going, Thomas? Yeah, I am crazy, and I got the mad science hair to prove it. So, with that said, moving right along. Don't look at the man behind the curtain.
you wanted me to explain about the water, how it all is water.
Yeah.
I wrote this to Terry Woodruff, May 15th. The holes in a diode and how they work. When we make a diode, we use a liquid. That liquid is composed of an element mixed with water to be placed as a medium. When the element dries, it loses its water, thus leaving holes. Those holes have a value due to how many holes. In the paste, those holes get filled with electricity for conversation's sake. But what really is going on is they get filled with water because electricity is water. Example, take a transistor and get it to its maximum value and watch what happens. Due to the force of electricity, it heats up and turns back into water. Another example would be a tungsten we use in a diode for vacuum tubes. We heat the tungsten to 2,000 degrees on one end of it, taking the water out, leaving holes so that the electrons can go forward. Think of it like this, a piece of Kleenex absorbing water. When we take a piece of Kleenex and place the tip in water, we see that the water will travel to all the holes, filling them up.
I've seen one where they was actually using like a paper towel to take water from one side of a container to the next. It's very, very interesting. But, you know, Either way, we're literally floating in the sea of energy. And so when I talk about how I don't care about current watts and amps, it's not about, you know, buy the book to run your toaster. You need that, all right? But in order to build an energy source, a different clean energy source, a free energy source, basically you need to figure out how to work in harmony with nature, being able to tip the balance, so to speak, without making nature mad, without defying any laws of physics, and just move the energy from point A to point B, or find a source where the energy's already moving from point A to point B, such as the wind turbine. You know, the wind's blowing. You're not changing the wind. You're not adding or taking away from the wind, so you're not defying any laws of physics. Then the only losses that you'd have to be concerned is any mechanical energy, but that's only losses on your side. That ain't no losses for nature. Nature's going to keep blowing the same amount of wind. You know what I mean? All you're doing is using that float, like kind of like whenever you get on a boat going down a river. You're not changing the river. You're just going along for the ride. You're just letting nature do what nature does. And so this is why I like high voltage. High voltage essentially can send a wave out in there. You could do it with low voltage, and we do too. I mean, there's all kinds of different high and low frequencies that are used to transmit. All you need on the opposite side is something to receive it. And if it's a weak signal, then you need some method for which to amplify that, to get it back into a usable current on the other side. And in order to get to a usable current on the other side, now you have to build up some pressure. You see what I'm talking about? Like the capacitor. When you discharge a capacitor, there is a lot of potential energy in a capacitor. One of the problems with capacitors is it's an instantaneous discharge if you short that direct. But if your swimming pool is bigger than your bucket, You're not going to take all that water out in one shot. You're just going to let it drain off a little bit at a time and then carry that bucket to where you need it. Does that make any sense? Hello? Y'all leave me hanging all the time. Don't jump to the microphone. You might chip a tooth. You understand any of this, Thomas?
Yeah. Yeah, a capacitor is basically converting any form of electricity that you normally use, whether it be DC or AC, and turning it into basically potential for a lightning bolt.
Yeah.
Because it's just sitting there on plates until it's needed again, so that's called static electricity, meaning you have excess electrons sitting on the surface that the atoms that the surface are made out of does not have room for.
And if you take those electrons that are stored there waiting to go somewhere and you tap a copper wire on there, what happens all the way down that line of electrons inside that copper wire? Mm-hmm. That pressure goes down that copper wire and energizes all those electrons down there, which start doing their thing and bumping each other, and you get an arc out the other side. You got electricity. You got movement. And it all came from something that was static, that was stored on a capacitor, that these electrons are just waiting in line looking for a place to go. The moment you stuck your tongue across that bug zapper fly swatter, which I wouldn't do because after I blew up a bunch of bugs on there, because it seems kind of nasty, but the moment you stuck your tongue on that, those electrons say, look, there's a tongue, let's get it.
So, well, I would say it's more like looking at, say, having a fence on top of a hill with a gate on it.
Yeah.
You got a bunch of rocks sitting inside that gate.
Well, see.
And when you open the gate, the rocks just roll down the hill.
Now you guys are getting it. And I'm sure you guys, you and Justin already got it way back when I first started talking about this. All I want is what is the easiest to do. And high voltage is the easiest for moving energy from point A to point B.
There is all different types of ways. You look at lead scallions, compound magnetic flywheel, right? Dynamo, however you want to call it, term it. He had an antenna up on top of his roof, which would fill up a capacitance, triggering a relay, and once you put the wheel in motion, the inertia took over, the relay kept going. And then you get a constant current.
Yeah, it's kind of like water finding
its
level.
If you take a rod and you put it up, and then you put an electroscope at the bottom of the rod, it'll make the gold leaves go up, which is pressure, which is...
You ever seen that old game called Mousetrap?
Yes.
Well, that's a good analogy, because in that game Mousetrap, when you put the ball at the top, it's got all these zigs and zags and curls that go around it and all these things that flip over. When you put that ball up at the top and that ball starts rolling down through that game, you don't lose any mass on that ball. You don't lose anything off that ball. The only thing you're doing is, as that ball is going down through this maze, it's doing work on the way by. And the same thing applies with water. You know, like, you could have a garden hose starting off at the top of a mountain, and you can zigzag all the way back and forth up that mountain and down the mountain around, but eventually the water is going to find its own level. And so as that water is coming down the side of that mountain, it don't care. It's going to keep on going. You're not going to lose none of that water. It's all that energy is going to come down. And all you're doing throughout the entire process, you could put as many little water wheels as you wanted in between that deal. You're still not going to lose any of that water. You might slow it down just a hair, but it's not going to stop it. It's going to find its way to its level. And if there ain't no level at the dirt, it's going to pour on out onto the ground at the bottom, and it's going to absorb its way down in through the rocks and the sand and whatever, and it's going to reconnect up with more water. See what I mean?
Well, I like to look at it as this way with atmospheric electricity. The toilet. We use the water for the work. It flushes. And then it fills back up, flushes, fills back up. It fills back up to a point because that's its equilibrium. It's designed almost like a transistor. But for it to do that work, we had to pump the water up into a tower to do that work.
Yeah.
We don't have to pump the magnetic field up. It's already above us. The pressure's already going this way. It's the radiant time of how long it takes. Now, if you create a path for it to travel and break the field collectors, then it's going to make pressure. You can just put up a simple line and put an electroscope underneath it, and it fills up. Now, if you make your line with, you know, a whole bunch of little collectors on it, it's going to fill up more. That's your load. That's the back of the toilet.
Well, here's what's even more brilliant than that alone. The Lord Kelvin generator. It takes water, and it drops water from a little height up in a bucket up there. And as the water is falling, it falls through a couple cans, and on each of these cans have some collectors down there that pick up a static charge. The same water that fell from the top can down to the bottom is still the same water, but on the way through there, you literally picked up extra energy on the way by. It's a different type of energy, but it's all energy nonetheless. And so you didn't lose nothing. And all we're doing with any generator that we make, we're not doing anything fancy. It's just how we get the energy from point A to point B that's the difference. Right now, we have to use a brute force magnetic field to force electrons to shake loose in order to create the current flow in the copper wire and such. And copper wire isn't nothing more than basically railroad tracks. That's it. You're just guiding the energy from point A to point B, and when those electrons are bouncing into each other in that copper wire, every time an electron interacts with another electron, the magnetic field gets stronger. And so all you have to do is cause that reaction. You don't have to do anything other than cause that reaction to get that magnetic field to increase. And when that magnetic field increases far enough that it can reach out and hit the permanent magnet's magnetic field, those two fields will interact with each other. And so why use 120 volts AC to do something that doesn't take 120 volts AC? All you have to do is get that field strong enough to be able to interact with the other field, and you get the motion that you would get from a magnet motor. Am I wrong?
Mm-hmm.
Well, so that's what I'm saying.
I'd like to go a little deeper into the Lord Calvin's thing, because it shows again that it is water. The bigger droplets of water, they get trapped in the coil, or however you want to call that. They get trapped in the effluvium, pushing the smaller water droplets along the wire. The effluvium is the atmosphere. If you look at it, and you can look at all kinds of videos, you see the water. It spins around. It gets trapped in there, just like the water gets trapped on the ionosphere, and it accumulates to a point where it comes back down, and when it comes back down, it brings the ionosphere with it, pulling it, creating a vacuum, and we see the clouds.
Well, see,
so the bigger droplets push the smaller droplets in the wire and create the energy.
The problem for the average Joe, and the reason why they can't see what it is that you're saying, is because they're looking at water like, if you can physically see a water drop, right? And you can't see, when water vaporizes, it happens all the time, causes all the water to break down and goes up in the atmosphere and then basically...
Condensation.
There's another
evaporation.
Evaporation, that's the word I was looking
condensation
for.
Condensation is the reverse of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
day and night.
When water evaporates, you can't see it, but it's still there. I mean, you're in a sea of it, and some places are more humid than others, so there's more moisture in that particular area than there would be, say, in some really dry spot, you know, like in the middle of the desert or something like that. But either way, there is a whole lot of potential energy right there in that by itself. What do you think?
Well, yeah, you could see it. If you take a dome bowl that's glass and you put it over top of a little tiny bowl with some water in it, and you observe that, you're going to see the water go up and down, up and down. That's because of the dielectric medium that allows that change to occur from our own atmosphere. But that's what's going on in our atmosphere. It's going up and down. It's collecting on the glass, the ionosphere, and it pulls it down.
And like Thomas said on the evaporation point, the condensation being the opposite side of the spectrum, when it gets cold, like up the higher you get up in the air, it gets colder up there. I mean, believe it or not, this earth that we're standing on has a lot of thermal heat that keeps us warm, that otherwise if we didn't have a molten core underneath our earth, or friction or some sort, or being able to trap in some radiant energy in the dirt, we'd be really cold. And so, you know, the energy that we store up during the daytime from the sun is what keeps us warm going around on the opposite side when we're in the dark. But that temperature difference will give you either rain or snow. You know, the heat will evaporate it. The cool air will cause it to recombine and condense it back into water again. So all we're doing is moving, and even with the rain and the clouds, the snow and all that, all we're doing is moving potential energy from point A to point B. We haven't added to nothing. You don't lose the water drop. You don't lose the hydrogen atom or the oxygen atoms. It just moves. It just trades places. That's it. And so the only argument that we have out here in the alternative energy community is how we're going to deliver the energy. It's already there. Am I wrong? Dang, you guys are going to like be toothless if you keep hitting the mic like that.
Well, if I was to react right away, it would be a form of irrationalism, right?
Yeah, well, don't
if
be irrational.
If I just throw something out, I might get it wrong, you know what I mean? You don't want to... I want to think before I speak, right?
Yeah, but radio silence is painful.
Hey,
Would you rather... Would you rather basically take care of somebody else's expectations and look like a complete idiot?
No, I agree.
Or work upon your own time frame.
Well, then, you know? See, that means that you actually just justified me getting radio air silence. That I was genius at work. We had a light bulb moment, and so it was quiet.
Well, hey, if you got a room, at some point, there's got to be dark in the room.
Yeah.
The light can't be on all the time.
Unless you're using free energy, then you just leave it on. And
sooner or later, that bulb's going to burn out.
Yeah.
Or something's going to happen that's going to interrupt it. And it's going to go out. And before you ever brought that bulb into existence, that volume of space was there before and had no light at some point.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's how it is. I mean, the universe works upon differences of, as Justin mentioned earlier, gradients, you know. And we've got some gradients that are on the extreme end of the spectrum, like, you know, complete darkness or incredible brilliant, you know, light. So
basically all we're doing is when we're using any kind of energy is just kind of tipping the balance there for a second and capturing the energy on either the way out or the swing back. And so, you know, like I said, we're not doing nothing. It's all about the delivery. It's whatever railroad tracks or tubing you want to use to move energy from point A to point B. So that's why I'm into high voltage and plasma. Plasma being the best tuning device. I mean, you could speed up and slow down the electrons inside there and actually build up pressure and heat inside there. I've actually seen incidences where you can get a vacuum tube so hot that it will literally explode. So that tells me inside that vacuum tube, there was a whole lot of potential energy going on. You know, you can only blow a balloon up so far before it blows up in your face. Have you ever done that, by the way?
Nope.
Get one of them big old punching bag balloons and keep blowing that thing up until it explodes. It'll come back and slap you in the face.
Yeah, no thanks. By the way, I think I got a little game now I'm going to start playing. That's how many episodes of Knights of the Round Table or Mad Science do we have to go before we get an episode where nobody mentions a toilet?
Yeah! It's like yard art, man. Plant flowers in it and leave it there. But
it's like just because you can put a flower in it doesn't mean it's a vase.
I guess probably the reason why I kind of make people mad about the way that my terminology just doesn't match the school books, and I try to explain it because in my mind it's simple. I like to explain it in simplicity, you know, such as electricity being just identical to the way that plumbing works, you know. You got a big pipe, you get a lot of volume. You got a small pipe, you build up a lot of pressure. And if you're trying to cram a large volume down a really small pipe, then at the other end you can squirt your brother in the eye from clear across the yard because you built up a lot of pressure. Well, the same thing with electricity. So if I can take a storage bank and I can rapidly fill that storage bank up with a really super high frequency wave, such as what they would call radiation, and that's what the dude's name again, Moreland or Moore, you have to ask Matthew because Matthew knows. Anyway, either way, he says that energy is radiation, and how can I argue with him, because energy is waves and radiation is waves. It's all waves. It's how... It's the only difference is the frequency of what you turn it on and off, like the transistor or the spark gap. You're just basically slapping around the magnetic field and using that rubber band effect as it snaps back into place to do something. And so with plumbing, when you want to force the pressure down there, if you just want a large volume of water, you just have one straight large water pipe. And as long as you can keep that full on the other side, then you'll continuously have that large volume. When the energy's out on the opposite side, you got no more water on that side. The capacitor bank, the high frequency, being able to charge a capacitor to basically run something on demand. If you're only running a diode, which you can literally try this yourself, you can put a little LED on a capacitor and you can charge that capacitor up and that little LED will stay lit. Ryan Abrams did a video here just recently where he used this stepper motor out of a... basically, it's a little motor that turns your turntable inside your microwave oven. and he hooked it up to an LED and a capacitor and made a little wind-up flashlight that you could use for, you know, worst-case scenario.
Yeah, you don't use the capacitor and hook up two LEDs, one going one way and one going the other way. You get this oscillating flash as you rotate it around.
Yeah.
Just don't sit in someone's back seat while they're driving down the road doing that with a red or a blue, and a blue or a red and a white one.
Yeah, because they'll be pulling over the side of the road thinking they're getting busted, man.
Yep. It looks like it's a like a cop car way up in the distance in their rearview mirror. So.
Well, anyway, so back to the whole repurposing thing. There's a lot of stuff out there that people consider to be junk and they throw it away. Like, say, one of those air purifiers, whenever they go bad, the motor goes bad, you know, they don't maintain it or nothing, and the motor gets all clogged up with dirt and then it burns up because it's it can't move freely anymore. Then they throw it in the trash. But inside that thing is a little circuit board, which essentially is a high voltage circuit. You know, it basically...
You're talking about an ionizer?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. That's a little different than just an air filter. Most people don't realize that an air filter is, you know, capable of being an ionizer as well. But they do make air filters that are just basically a fan blowing air through a bunch of crap. And, you know, in goes dirty air and out comes slightly cleaner air with, you know, smaller... as small a particulate as that filter can capture.
Well, they use the ozone to basically kill off biological, bacteria and stuff from the ozone. And so essentially what's going on in there is the AC current's going through another little circuit that's stepping that voltage up to a high frequency, which is jumping across the spark gap and ionizing the air.
There's a DC aspect to it somewhere, too, because there's a set of plates in there that are basically receiving an extremely high voltage negative charge only.
Yeah.
And another plate somewhere off inside that system that's getting the pot, that's basically having all the electrons drain from it to pump it into that plate so that they can be blown out into the air as the air blows over it.
Yeah, this one that I'm holding in my hand, it's not even like the one that you're talking about. It's actually got a long needle pin on one side and the wire which jumps across the gap, and the needle pin itself is the plates. And so,
be careful, don't touch those pins.
Yeah, definitely not, because they definitely light you up. But all it's doing is basically energizing, just like the Tesla coil. It's energizing the gas that's in the atmosphere, and that's why you start smelling that ozone being created, you know. And that's what our planet does all the time. It lightning bolts flashing around superheats the atmosphere, which basically creates ozone. It makes the ozone layer around our planet, and nature does it, so it ought to be okay, right? I gotta catch my breath.
I was gonna say nature spews molten rock onto the ground every now and then too, but I don't think you want to do that in your house.
Well, no, that probably doesn't function. There are certain things you shouldn't do inside your house, like, you know, spray the garden hose or...
bring a bear inside?
Yeah.
Especially when it's hungry?
As cute and cuddly as bears might look, you sure don't want to try to bring them in for breakfast.
I was going to say, that's why we have houses, is to separate ourselves from those aspects of... nature that are not really conducive to our existence.
There always has to be a drawback in the plan, man.
That's right. Hey, you can't have a draw forward without a drawback.
Yep. So, well, there you go, man. Even in that, nature balances itself out. You know?
Mm-hmm.
If a stupid man brings a bear inside there, then nature will balance out the stupidity level of the planet.
Then I was going to say, that'll become a bear's home.
Yeah. So if you ain't going to be confident in there or intelligent enough to be able to, I'll just give it to the bear, you know. And the stronger species wins out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the more intelligent one. If you're not as smart as the bear, then you better not let the bear in your house.
I was going to say, if you're not as strong as the bear, then you got to be smarter than the bear.
Yeah.
So that's what I believe I see there.
Such as don't leave breadcrumbs for him to follow right into an open door and to the kitchen table where the honey jar is at.
Caveman used to do paintings of extraordinary events. That's why you see cave paintings of lightning and stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
And if that's the case, then, you know, why would they do a cave painting of a group of guys getting together with some sticks and sharp rocks and taking down a bear? Obviously, that was a big deal.
Yep.
So, you know, don't feed the bears.
Definitely don't
feed themselves.
Bears ain't got no problem. They'll get the picnic basket if they want it.
Picnic basket's no good for them anyway. Let them go get themselves some nuts and berries.
Yeah, but, you know, that's right, because some of what you're eating probably give that bear some cholesterol problems or worse. You know,
they'll just flat out kill them. I'm sure people have heard about, you know, not feeding your dog chocolate, so.
Yeah.
There's a lot of animals out there, just like the bear, too, that cannot handle the stuff that we eat. So, or drink. I mean, milk. Hello? Milk for cows is for calves. It's not for humans.
Well, what do you say we take a quick music break and refresh our coffee and tea and come back and polish this up, man? What do you think? Cool. Well, everybody...
Well, I don't know about the polishing it off, but...
All right, we'll finish out the show.
We'll leave and come back. Because, you know, that's how things work. You can't always be there. Got to be away sometime.
Yep. All right, everybody, well, stay tuned. You're listening to Shazoo's Mad Science, and we'll be back shortly.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Can you read?
space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
All right, everybody, we're back. You're listening to Mad Science. We got Thomas Anderson and Justin in here, and we're talking about moving energy from point A to point B, the simple of it, and we're also talking about repurposing junk out there. And the reason why I put that video in there from Matthew is because that's the kind of videos that I'm interested in, things that you can repurpose, such as he used also a fish tank pump. Not a fish tank pump, but a fountain pump, or you know, you could use just about any electric pump like that to build literally a generator. And so watching these videos and taking note of all the different things that you can pull out of appliances to get things that you could actually build a electric generator of some sort would be beneficial for being able to produce energy. Now, to get to the point where we actually got what we would classify as free energy, you know, we're not talking about over unity. We're not talking about zero point. All we're talking about doing is tapping into what nature has already provided and use that to power our stuff. Now, since the system was designed inefficiently, I mean, it's like, back in the day, when Tesla was making electric motors, he made some pretty efficient electric motors that would beat the ones that are here today. And what year did Tesla die in? Is he's from crud? I can't even remember. You guys remember how long ago it's been since Tesla died? Anybody?
A couple years.
Either way, it's from the 1800s to the early 1900s, they had better electric motors back in that day than they do now. But either way, they, you know, if you got tons of copper wire, you got access to it, then you can wind as much as you want. But in the apocalypse scenario, and you can't come across copper wire, well, then you still need to be able to move the energy from point A to point B. Therein lies why I was talking about the static motor. Because with the static motor or the atmosphere motor, you're using the potential energy that's already in the air to get it to do some work. Now, the little Atmo motors that you see out there, like Cultus was working with, those aren't necessarily going to run a huge generator head. However, what you could do with that is, in the process of that energy being moved from point A to point B, is grab some of that potential energy off of there and put it into a capacitor bank and fill that capacitor bank up to store a charge that would then in turn have a punch to it. And so if you built a bigger version, a better version, and you used the energy as it's passing through to charge up capacitor banks, when it's jumping across that spark gap, and you got a capacitor in line with that thing, it's going to grab some energy off of that. All right? And if all you're doing is using your static motor to spin around using energy that you got from the atmosphere for free anyway, charging up a capacitor bank and then draining that capacitor bank off to use whatever it is that you're wanting to run, that's what I'm talking about. It's like the wind turbine. It's like the water wheel. Any of those examples there, all you're doing is grabbing that energy on the way by. You ain't took nothing away, you ain't gained nothing, you're just using it. You're storing it, and then you're using it. Once you use it, it's back into the world again. See what I mean? It's that simple. Light bulb moment. So we got brilliance at work here, man. And so know, all these folks out there like overunity.com and Zero Point Energy, they're trying to figure out a way to get out more than they put in. Well, in some sense, I believe they could actually do it because, you know, if it only takes a few volts to create thousands of volts, and you can turn that thousands of volts back into a different style of energy and run something, and it only took you, let's say, 9 volts to start off, then, you know, to some extent, that would be right. You could get out more than you put in. But for argument's sake, since perpetual motion is supposedly 100% not possible because there's too many losses in the system, I ain't going to even talk about zero point or over unity. I'm not trying to get out more than I'm trying to put in. All I'm trying to do is using the wind blowing through one window and going out the other window to do work that I want done. See what I mean? Anybody? Going once.
Going sold. Two.
Sold. And so, you know, basically, the static motor, I think, as far as all the alternative energy devices out there, the concepts of how the static motor actually works. Some of them work via basically building up a charge of electrons on one plate, and then that wants to go around and attract to one that doesn't have as many. So basically, electrons are moving from point A to point B. It's all you're doing. The way that I designed my static motor wasn't to necessarily pick up the charge on one side and then opposites attract and go around the other side. What I was actually using was the pressure of the static discharge itself, because there's a lot of power in there. A lightning bolt gives you a visible light spectrum, which we know light is heat and heat is light, vice versa. So there's a twofer right there. It gives you an acoustic wave from the pressure of the discharge, so you can literally hear a lightning bolt. You get a whole lot of high voltage, and as it's all this energy is putting up, it literally creates like the Venturi effect and sucks energy in from the atmosphere, which in turn amplifies it, just like the way that the Slayer Exciter and the Tesla coil function. It's literally pulling energy from the surrounding area and punching it up. So what I'm saying isn't any different than what they're doing. I'm just explaining it different. Am I wrong? Anybody?
Just take the negative response as the lack of response as a positive that you're not, you know.
Yeah. Well, I just want people to kind of look at things a little bit different. And when I see videos like the one I posted up there, where the guy took the fluorescent bulb and made a capacitor out of it, a variable capacitor out of it, that's impressive. Because you see videos out there where people are putting pennies on top of plasma balls and they're getting a little shock coming off of there, and, you know, being able to charge up a capacitor using the plasma ball. Now, when you go to talk about, oh, look, there's free energy source, then people say, well, you're using 120 volts AC to get that out of there, so you're putting in more than you're getting out on the other side, stupid. And I'm like, look, dude, you don't need 120 volts AC to get the plasma. All you need is a high voltage wave that you could create with a 1.5 volt pin light battery. That's all. I mean, that last video that I did, I took a, not the very last video, not the nature one, the one prior to that, I took an igniter off of a barbecue grill, gas barbecue grill. There's a little electric igniter that takes 1.5 volts. And those things are so impressive. I haven't tried to hit it with any more voltage because I don't know how much that little igniter could withstand, but I'm going to get another one. And I'm going to try to put 2 pin light batteries on there to see if I can increase the power on it and see how many batteries I can put before I eventually burn it up. So I want to see at Well, I know at the least 1.5 volt runs it, because that's what it uses already. But there's an energy source right there in a little compact coil, man. And it's enough to pulse a Tesla coil. It's enough to run my static motor. And it's enough to energize inert gas into the plasma state. And if you can energize gas into the plasma state, you can light up all the fluorescent light bulbs you want. If you want to light up a trillion light bulbs, then you need to turn it up a hair. You see what I mean? Send a signal out further. So all you're doing is moving what we call electricity from point A to point B. That's it. It's just a matter of how you're going to get it there. It's going to be the same thing on the opposite side. It's still going to be whatever electricity really is, whatever magnetism really is. It's still going to be that on the opposite side. All you're doing is cause and effect, reaction. You know, you do something, something happens. That's it. So all these folks trying to, you know, get the over unity and all that, I think they're going about it the wrong way. It's a simple about jumping in your canoe and riding down the doggone river. And you ride for free. Have you ever got a bill on a canoe trip? Well, I mean, you probably did from the landowner. But you didn't from the river, did you?
I don't know, man. That river can send you one heck of a hospital bill if you do go down some rapids and don't pay attention to what you're doing.
Yeah, there's a lot of stored potential energy in a river, and so with that said, I guess a river could be very taxing. Oh, man.
Death and taxes, man.
Yep, they can count
only
on
thing
that.
You can be, only thing you can be sure of is you'll be taxed to death.
But I keep saying free energy, and I'm going to continue to say free energy because it's that simple. Now, to get free energy in an apocalyptic scenario, it's as simple as knowing what it is that you're looking for. Simple as finding the electric motors and junk. And if you can't run it off of, you can't run your toaster off of a little electric motor that is producing some high voltage AC, then why not take the time to use that high voltage AC to charge up a storage bank, such as like a swimming pool? You know, it's obvious if I'm just trickling water into an Olympic sized pool, it's going to take forever and a day to try to fill that thing up. But if
it's not evaporating faster than you're trickling it in.
Yeah. But if I can get enough energy to fill that capacitor bank up, and that capacitor bank is like a piggy bank. Once it's full, it's full. And the next penny you got to try to put in there ain't going to go in. It's going to start falling out. So when you fill that capacitor bank up, that energy wants to go somewhere. And it's going to go the first place, the shortest distance between two points is a straight line. It's going to go to the shortest gap it can get across. And if that's
This is why I was talking about that specialized capacitor with you know, you got multiple plates, and the more plates you have, the more voltage you can pretty much shove into it.
Oh yeah, Robert Murray Smith is doing a super capacitor, man. I would love to get a hold of one of those things.
Right. Well, I was going to say, the thing is though, if you push that power into each plate individually, you should be able to use a lower voltage to fill them up.
Yeah.
And then whenever it's draining out, you get higher voltage if they're all connected in series where they drain out. But if it's all just, you know, hooked up like a normal capacitor, then if you're only pushing, say, 10 volts and it's a 20-volt capacitor, it's only going to fill to the 10-volt line.
Yeah.
The rest of the capacitor is going to go to waste.
But if you got, once you get that capacitor full, and if you're not draining it off like instantaneously, you're just draining off just a little bit at a time, it doesn't take much on the other side to maintain it. So if you turn the frequency up high and fill that thing up quickly, and you get to a point where you're creating more, using more energy, storing more energy than you can use on demand, you just dial it back on the opposite side to turn the valve down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's that simple. people try to complicate things, and that's why I get so aggravated. I mean, we should be so much farther advanced in things that sometimes I just kind of wonder if whether or not this world's even ready for being advanced. You know? Because if people are going to read a school book and they're going to take it as it's the gospel, that's the only one way from here to there is what this book says. You ain't going to get no new innovations. I want to see guys like this one that did made the capacitor out of the fluorescent bulb, repurposing and using it for dual purpose uses, and what Matthew Drummond's is doing, where he's going out there, he's taking old TVs and taking parts out of that and parts out of this, and he is, like, in every circuit board, like let's just take for example the TV set itself. There's a flyback transformer in there, which is essentially a step up transformer, and it's going to take voltage from your wall and raise it up higher to a different frequency so that it can run that tube inside there, the colors inside the tube. But if you know what this thing does, you can literally chop out sections that you want. I want high voltage, so the only thing I need out of this is a step-up transformer and something to pulse that coil. That's it. Same thing with all the other appliances out there. There are multiple uses that you could use for junk that's just laying around. People throwing away fluorescent bulbs all day long, every day. Schools throw them away by the hundreds or more. And because they won't work in the natural system anymore, the normal system that we're accustomed to. You can't stick it in the socket and it won't work right. But you could walk in there with a Slayer Exciter and hook it up to that doggone thing and light all that dead bulbs right back up. You see what I mean?
Right.
And it didn't take 120 volts to do it. You can do it with a doggone 9-volt battery. Probably less. There's some really good YouTubers out there that are doing some mini versions of it. I want to see who can build the best and the smallest Slayer Exciter. That's what I'd be interested in. Plus, I'd like to see a multiple Slayer Exciter, you know, side by side, that you can literally tune the frequencies as you go. You know, turn them up, turn them down, that kind of thing. And it'd be as simple as either on the input side with a variable or a potentiometer or a variable capacitor or whatever. You know, basically to turn it up, turn it down like you would your radio. That's it. You know, the standard circuit, that's going to be one specific frequency to start. And you got some sort of tuning that you can do on the coil itself to get it to resonate right. But other than that, the initial is just one frequency. You can use the spark gap to change that frequency on the opposite side. And your light bulb's going to get brighter or dimmer to determine on where you're at. But once again, all you're doing is taking junk, moving energy from point A to point B. Doggone it. Dad burn it. By golly. And such. But now, all the high-tech terminology out there, you can lose a lot of people in the crowd there. Because not everybody's read all the school books, and not everybody's a math whiz, and like when Justin keeps saying fluvium, I keep thinking of something completely different than what he's saying. Anyway, I ain't going to go there. Anyway, it kind of sounds like that guy from Flubber. The terminology, it in order to be able to explain to the average Joe, is going to make the difference.
It's not stupid. It's advanced.
I like that. Anyway, so we've pretty much covered a whole lot of stuff there, man. Can you guys think of any appliances or anything out there that people ought to eyeball for using? Like, for instance, the microwave oven has two magnets in there, has a a transformer that has some thick wire on one side and some thinner wire on the opposite side. Has a little step-up motor in the carousel portion that spins your food around inside there. And even has a light bulb in there. There's switches
inside
there.
That motor is actually usually just an AC motor that has a gearbox on it.
Yeah.
Slow it down. That's not a stepper motor. Stepper motor actually has windings on the outside, and it has a whole bunch of magnetic wells, if you will, because of its shape.
When you switch those coils,
when you switch the power to those coils back and forth, it causes it to move an increment and then stop.
Okay, so...
So you can accurately position it anywhere you want.
So those little geared AC motors in there, either way, I saw a video one time where a dude said he picked it up and said it shocked the living crud out of himself. I'm like, there ain't no way that little motor shocked him like that, you know? And so what did I do? I went out and got one of the motors, and I held on to the two wires, and I had a pair of vice grips on that little deal, and I spun that puppy around, and I shocked the living crud out of myself. I probably should have listened.
Yeah. I was going to say, if somebody heard you and they're like, ooh, stepper motors, your better option is to look inside of old scanners.
For your computer
to scan documents and whatnot. So there's one in there, and some, especially old dot matrix printers, there's a couple of them in those. So some of them are actually pretty good size, too. Got a little bit of heft to them.
And you can also...
Don't take them apart, because if you take them apart, when you put them back together, they will not be as strong as they were.
Yeah.
It destroys something about the permanent magnets that are in there. It does something to them that causes them to demagnetize a fair portion, and you end up with a very weak motor afterwards. It'll still work, it just won't work very well.
And those motors that Terry Woodruff and Ryan Abrams, the X-13s that they're talking about, that they used to, I've seen these guys pulse these things with a small voltage and be able to turn some pretty good size weights stacked on top of them. But there are tons and tons of electric motors all over this globe, some of which, like your hard drive motors, which you wouldn't even really think would be worth anything, you can still pulse those things, and putting some magnets off of the hard drive on there, flying past coils, could give you, you know, a high voltage AC current that, you know, you can use for whatever. There's all kinds of methods. It's just, what do you need? You know, if I just need lighting alone, that's the easy part. I can get that.
Mm-hmm.
And if it takes 120 volts AC to run my refrigerator or my electric fan or something like that, we know we can bring an electric fan down to 12 volts and less by changing the motor in there to a DC motor. So why couldn't we do the same thing to a washer? You know, there's a lot of 12-volt and 24-volt electric motors that are pretty doggone strong, man. So instead of using 120 volts AC, why couldn't you just change the motor in there? Or rewind the core inside there to run on less. Throw some permanent magnets up in there. Make the motor to where it would run off of 12 volts DC. Or 24 volts even.
No.
It's possible. Is it going to be a pain in the neck? Yeah, probably. But in an apocalyptic scenario, you want your refrigerator to work or not?
Right.
There's a lot of different ways to cool stuff, too. Using, heat transfers, the difference between hot and cold, Peltier elements and stuff like that. But you got to know it before so that you can do it whenever it's time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Don't learn about it during the apocalypse. Learn about it after the apocalypse. It's easier to get information right now. You got access to the internet. But if the power goes out, do you even know how to recreate your own internet? There you go. There's the key. Communications. What could you communicate with? You could communicate with a phone line. There was a guy, they call him Freakers or something like that. I can't remember what basically they were tapping into phone lines and they were causing everybody's phone to ring at the same time.
Right.
So,
you're talking about it's freak with a PH, not an F.
Yeah.
So, and actually, their primary activity was figuring out how to get those payphones to give them free long distance.
Yeah, they did that too.
Put a quarter in, and then you've got a little box that generates a tone so that the long distance carrier thinks you're still dropping more coins in there when you're not.
Well, either way, they did have a deal where they were running around ringing everybody's phone, and basically the phone's waiting for a signal, and you can tap in that phone line, whoever's connected, their phone's going to ring. It's as simple as that. So send Morse code with the ringing of the phone if you have to. Would the guy on the other side even know what Morse code was? He'd probably just be, I don't know who's ringing that bell, but I wish they'd stop.
Yeah, I was going to say, if it's expected to ring off and on like that, they probably wouldn't really pay any attention to it, because it's just, to their mind, it's just meant to signify that somebody's trying to call.
Yep.
No, and nothing more. If it was something else that wasn't intended to be going on and off like that, making a tone, somebody might catch on that there's Morse code behind it.
Yeah.
Just depends. So,
well, you know what? Even with the power grid itself, you could literally, if the power grid was completely down, there wasn't no electricity coming in, you could literally plug into your wall and send Morse code to people's appliances. For some reason, that microwave oven over there keeps blinking on and off. I don't know how it's doing it, because there ain't no power. And I'm sending dots and dashes to Thomas's house saying, you know, hey man, I'm here, can you see it? So using what you got around you, knowing what's inside the junk, and knowing what not to throw away. Justin mentioned earlier about glass. You know, people waste glass all the time. Glass bottles. I even store up glass bottles out here, because there's all kinds of functions you could use them for.
The dielectric realm is very important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They make good capacitors out of them things. I sound like I'm talking through a sewer pipe, because I hear myself echoing on your side.
Somewhere, yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody needs to turn their...
Isn't it cool talking into a sewer pipe? It's good now.
Speakers up.
Anyway, yeah, that's it, man. There's three good videos that were posted in there. One which was how the guy made a variable capacitor using a doggone fluorescent bulb. There's an old military deal that talks about how to make a voltage doubler. And voltage doublers can be made to triplers and quadruplers and on up and whatever. And you can take your your AC, which doesn't have a lot of current watts and amps, and still be able to double that to high voltage and send that frequency wave down a line and light up some bulbs, store, charge some capacitor banks using some spark gaps. And, you know, it doesn't have to just be one spark gap. One thing I figured out about static electricity, it's not discriminatory. It will go in any direction to anything. And so if you got multiple capacitors and you got enough static discharge, it's going to jump across to all of those capacitors.
Right.
Yeah, it's like lightning bolt. Those fingers that you see, that big old look like a giant tree roots coming down at you from the sky or the ground, whichever way you think it goes. It's going to chase around and get all your friends in one shot. So that's the simple of it. And the videos like Matthew Drummond's doing, if you guys find any videos out there that are guys like Matthew that are going around salvaging up old parts from junk, you know, somebody throws an old computer out on the curb for the trash man, and you see a crazy guy running out there grabbing that thing up and running into a shop with it, those are the guys that I'm interested in talking to. You know, it'd be nice to have access to the brilliant minds and all the labs out there, but, you know, you got to have an open mind. You got to think outside the box, and thinking outside the box means questioning the way that we use our electricity. It's the delivery system that we're arguing about and the terminology that we're arguing about. We're talking about the same doggone thing, energy, whether it be magnetism or whatever. It's all the same thing. We're swimming around in a pool of it. There's enough potential energy in a drop of water to do some crazy stuff, man. So, you know, can you run your toaster on a drop of water? There, Thomas.
No telling.
Well, I bet if you split the atoms, you might get a lot of energy there.
Right, right. Maybe a little too much.
Might blow your toaster up. So we're going to change the railroad tracks, we're going to change the delivery system and the way that we tap into the energy, and we're going to redefine the way that energy does if we're ever going to get energy independence anywhere in this world. The governments ain't going to do it because they like the system the way it is. It, you know, as long as you have to pay electric bill, hey, they get taxes, and taxes make the world go around.
Well, they'd like to have you believe that.
Yeah. But you can always trust your government, man. That's what I can say that. Well, anyway, we're down to the wire. You guys got any other thoughts that you want to throw out there?
No.
The power of the top hat has spoken.
None here.
Anyway, there's just a whole lot more to this world than meets the eye, folks. Whatever you want to call energy, it's all out there. And during the worst case scenario, there are things that you can use around your general vicinity and in the dumps that you can literally create electricity. If you want a fan, then turn it on. And light bulbs, same thing. Tesla was lighting up a light bulb that was plugged into the dirt clear the heck away from his place. And all he was doing is sending a wave. That's it. Simple as that. Moving the energy that nature already provided from point A to point B. So leave the terminology out the door and just explain it to it. It's as simple as throwing a pebble into the pond. You're going to have some sort of reaction at the other side. And you throw a boulder in the pond, well, you're going to do a lot of stuff. Slap some water in your face. I went and stomped in the mud hole. I was going to slop my brother one time, and because I didn't know all the laws of physics at the given time and couldn't see underneath that water and see that there was a flat ledge on the other side, guess what happened? Nothing?
I have no idea. You fall in the water or something?
Well, imagine stomping in the water, and the water goes up against a brick wall and then comes right back in your face.
Oh. Right.
So when I stuffed in the water, it came right back at me.
So you're the kid that whenever you were made to wash the dishes, you stuck the spoon under the faucet and got a face full of water too, huh?
Yeah. Then I asked the question, why did that happen? Anyway, my brother just kind of looked at me when I did that, and all he said was, stupid. Serves you right. You're trying to slop me with some water. What about you, Justin?
We got nothing.
I got nothing. Well, we've said a lot, so I guess there, you know, nothing's
there. Well, actually, you guys ever see the pictures?
You guys ever see the pictures of Tesla pumping the Earth?
Explain.
Well, it's his. Wardenclyffe Tower, right? Strategically placed around the world, you'd have multiple towers, right?
Yeah. Like radio antennas. Like cell phone towers.
Yep. So, around the world, one time there existed obelisks. If you punch something into the ground, you get the electric field, and you get the right-hand rule that follows with that. A granite obelisk is doing that. That's the electric field. The sky is the magnetic field. You're creating vortexes around the Earth, keeping the momentum constant, because we are magnetohydrodynamics.
Well, we're going to have to save that for the next episode, because we're not down to the like wire there, but man, look, it's as simple as this. Right now, we got radio antennas all over the planet. We got repeaters all over the planet. We're sending energy out. The same radio station sends energy out to thousands of homes. And the only reason why they can't run their house off is because the radio station ain't pushing it hard enough. Now, if you're standing next to a 50,000 watt transmitter, you could light up a few light bulbs with that. But that's basically what was going on. They're basically using Tesla was using the same thing we've been talking about to send waves out that could have been picked up by anybody and gave them electricity at their house. The way that our system is working, we're sending the energy out, and you have to use a little mini amplifier on your other side to be able to amplify it up, you know, loud so you can jam down and make your neighbor mad because you're too loud and get the cops called on you. But if you did the right frequency at the right in the right way and you had the right receiver on the opposite side, whatever he sends out the other side will come over there and you'll get enough to run your appliances. That's why everybody out there is trying to do the wireless energy transfer. I just think that what they hadn't figured out so far is a way in which to actually get to go far enough, because they don't understand what Tesla was trying to show them and what Justin and all of us have been talking about. Anyway, there's only like 2 minutes left in there, so if you guys want to say hi, Mom, or something like that, or you'll throw your YouTube out there, you better hurry up. All right. Well, everybody, you've been listening to Shazoo's Mad Science. Peace and love to everybody. Stay tuned. Go out there, watch some YouTube videos, and see what kind of junk you could repurpose out there. Matthew Drummond's, he's doing some good videos. Go check out his YouTube channel. That's the video link that's in the Wake Radio chat room and Shazoo's Radio chat room. You have to scroll up to get to that one, but maybe I'll just throw it in there again. Anyway, that's that. So, peace and love, everybody. Take care. Do-do-do-do-do-do. I was going to throw a tune right there, but I guess I ain't got time for all that, didn't do I? I'll just do that. Okay. Take care, everybody. Been listening to Shazoo's Mad Science.
Space. The final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission. To explore strange new worlds. To seek out new life and new civilizations. To boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
21 gigawatts!